carry credit at first.
They carried credit at first because no one had any idea that the Depression was going to last as long as it did. And like I say, of course out here, the Depression, the effects of the real Depression didn't hit us till about 32. Because we had, in the East, where it was highly industrialized, they laid off thousands and thousands of people. In the Middle West, too, I imagine, the Chicago area and Indiana and Gary around there, where the big steel plants are, and where all types of manufacturing was going on.
But you didn't have that kind of
base
here.
We had nothing here. There was not only no industry to speak of, there weren't too many people to lay off. There weren't many more people in the city of San Diego then than there was in some of those big plants back east. We had a total population of, say, 65 or 70,000 people. I don't recall what the exact population was, but it was pretty sparse. And the industry, as I remember, was very, very small. Like I say, the Benson Lumber Company used to haul their logs down here in big log rafts in the ocean. They towed them down from Oregon, and then they milled the lumber right here that was used in San Diego. So that one lumber company down there was more than sufficient to supply the lumber needs for San Diego. I mean, can you imagine something like that now? And
they brought the lumber for the construction trades in that form, and then milled it locally.
Came down in huge lumber log rafts, chained together. And the same way with the canneries. They had two or three little fish canneries. And most of their help was the wives of the fishermen. There was a soap factory. There was a salt works, the Western Salt Works, over in Nelson City. And they didn't hire too many people, probably not more than 10 or 12 people. So we had no industry here to keep anyone except services such as waiters and waitresses in a few places. Like downtown, we had the Savoy, and of course there was the Carnatic Hotel. We had a few restaurants and very few hotels that amounted to anything. We had the Maryland and the St. James. Clark, his name Howard Clark or Jimmy Clark, who later on built the Desert Inn in Las Vegas.
Wilbur Clark.
Wilbur Clark. He was a bellhop down in the St. James Hotel.
Did you know him?
Yes. As a matter of fact, when I was working in the King George Hotel, Wilbur Clark's father moved into the hotel. I made a deal with him. He had a roulette wheel, and he had a wheel of fortune, and a blackjack board, and he came. He propositioned me that if he could have a room in the hotel and he could set up a little gambling in there, well, he'd slip me a fin once in a while, you know. I let him come in. Well, it didn't last too long because the management got one to close that down. But that was Wilbur Clark's father.
During the real height of the Depression day, what kind of a situation was south of the border down in Tijuana? Was there a lot of
the foreign club was open then.
How about the wetback problem? Were Mexicans coming up here trying to look for work? Or was it...
There were no immigration officers to speak of to stop anybody that wanted to go back and forth across the border. There was no thought about that because there was no industry to entice them to come up here to speak of. They could starve just as well down there in Mexico as they could up here. And then another thing, the attitude towards the Negroes and the Mexicans in those days was just about on the par as the attitude towards the military, as far as sailors and Marines were concerned. The white man up here had nothing to do with the Mexican or nothing to do with the Negro. I mean, there was that much prejudice. And if you had a Negro friend, well, you didn't exploit him around because you were ashamed to have anybody know you had a friend who was a Negro. That's the attitude people had. So they didn't come up here. They didn't bother us. They could have walked across the border with no trouble at all, but there was nothing here for them to do. People wouldn't hire them.
How about the bootlegging problem?
Bootlegging?
As far as Mexico is concerned.
Well, that's where they got their alcohol. There was a distillery down there, and it was Johnson's Distillery, and they made pure alcohol. They also made a whiskey, and I can't remember the name of the whiskey, but they made alcohol, and the bootleggers would go down there, and you could buy a gallon of alcohol for $15, pure alcohol, 160 proof, and then bring it back, which was illegal, of course, but if you got back across the border with it, you split it with distilled water, and now you had 2 gallons, and then they would either make gin out of it by putting a little juniper extract in it, or they'd make whiskey by burning some sugar to give it color and a little bourbon flavoring, and that was it. And they bootlegged it. And they had lots of trade here. Business was booming as far as the bootleggers were concerned.
What kind of prices would they get for a half pint or a pint?
I think that, as I recall, we'd pay $2 for a pint of gin. And maybe $5 for a fifth of whiskey. $4 maybe. I can't remember. I really can't remember what we paid for it. Not a fifth, a full quart.
Were you drinking much in those days?
No, I didn't. I drank a little, but I didn't have enough money to invest it in that kind of thing.
You ever make a pass at doing a little distilling yourself?
Yeah, not distilling. I made home brew. I made quite a bit of home brew, and I sold a little of it too. But not much, just to my close friends. Very close friends.
Not as a business.
No, not as a business, because, boy, that was a penitentiary offense to get picked up for that. But I never did any distilling. I did go down one time, and Ez could tell you about that, and I got a gallon of alcohol, and I brought it over here, and I split it, and I sold 1 gallon split, and that paid for the other gallon that I had. In other words, I paid $15 for the gallon of alcohol, and I sold a gallon of split for $15. So I had a gallon of booze for free. That's the only experience I ever had, but I ran that across the border myself with a friend, and he got a gallon too, and we brought both of them back in his car. They didn't question his fortune.
I know you were picking up a buck here and there in those days when things were really tough as a musician. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, that's when I was in the King George Hotel. as a musician?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was in 29. And I belonged to the Musicians Union then for a short period of time, and we went down to one of the jobs we had was playing in Tecate, Mexico. And the border closed at 9 o'clock in those days, and you had an order to get back. And we didn't get through with playing for the dance until 9 o'clock. And as a consequence, we had to climb over a 9-foot fence to get back across the border. Well, we tried time after time to smuggle a pint of whiskey or two across with us so we'd have something to drink on that 60-mile drive back to San Diego. And they may have, on one or two occasions, been successful, but for the most part, the customs man would walk right up to the man that had it and say, okay, let me have that pint of whiskey you got. Because these little Mexican, they'd give the little Mexican kids a dime or a quarter to tail us, and whoever bought the booze, they'd keep an eye on you and watch where you put it, and then when you cross the border, they'd tell you, they'd run up and tell the customs agent before you got there who had it and where it was, and whose banjo case or whose saxophone case. And all they'd ever do, they never find us, they just take the booze away from us and laugh at us. On a couple of occasions, one I was, not me, I was never successful, but a couple of the guys got through with it, and we'd have a drink on the way home.
During the height of the Depression, when times were really tough, did you ever pick up an extra buck then as working as a musician?
No. Oh, as a musician, let me see, when did I play?
Were there any jobs for musicians here in San Diego?
Very seldom. Because the reason for that was that most of all of the musicians were working on WPA as musicians. The WPA they'd have dances, and the WPA would pay them to play. So
these were community dances, Dave?
Any kind of dance, yeah. Community dances in schoolhouses or wherever.
Street dances?
Probably. But I know that it was generally WPA. That they paid for everything. They paid the artists to paint murals in the schools. They paid them to teach. They paid musicians to play wherever it was they wanted them to play, give concerts in the park. And things of that nature, but for a musician, I did play. I did have a couple of engagements out at Big Stone Lodge as a union musician.
You were carrying a card, though.
Yeah. But and he pulled it out, and I didn't play anymore. In fact, I never did. I never did play as a musician in the union. After that, never have.
This was what, when you become 30 what?
About 1930.
30.
Right.
So during the height of the Depression, when you were just struggling trying to get by in the building trades, there was no work. It was pickup work as a musician.
No. If I had stayed with it, probably if I had stayed in the union, I might have gotten some WPA work, but by then I was getting WPA work doing other things, off and on. There was nothing steady about WPA work. They'd give you, they'd allow you so much work, and then you'd have to lay off for a week and let somebody else get in time.
You were working as a painter for the WPA?
Well, I worked as a painter, and I worked up in Dalwell Park. In preparation for the fair, that was in 34. I worked with pick and shovel on the Florida Street Cut. That was before that, considerably. And that was when we built a road from Park Boulevard down across Florida Street up to Pershing Drive. It was all done by hand. I remember Kate Sessions came out then and donated some trees to plant along there.
Dave, how did you manage to support your problem with prosthetics? it's such an expensive thing when you just simply didn't have any, didn't, you were having a rough time getting by.
Well, I didn't. Of course, I had an artificial leg, but I did the repair work myself. I just kept it up myself to the best of my ability. I really didn't. When I finally did go to work and was able to do anything like that, the first thing I did was go down and get a new artificial leg.
How long have you been wearing the one that you had then?
Oh. About 8 years.
8 years?
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty long stretch, isn't
pretty
it?
Without stretch. Having the adjustment. Yeah, sure it is. Yeah, that was in terrible shape. Wow.
Was that just one of the side effects of the depression? That nothing really you could do about it, right?
Nothing you could do about it. You couldn't go to a place like that in those days. When everybody finally realized that this is going to be a long-lasting thing, you couldn't go into a store and say, well, I don't have any money, I'd like to have this, or I need this. We'd charge it. If you didn't have any means of support, visible means of support, you just didn't get it. You went without.
Credit really tightened up then.
Oh, yes, because most of the merchants had already extended themselves to the point of going bankrupt on credit alone. Grocery stores closed up because they went along and they trusted their old customers that had been paying faithfully all down through the years. They trusted them for maybe a year or a year and a half or 2 years to the point where practically every customer was on the pad. Charge it. And then they could no longer buy merchandise, so they closed their stores. And this was all over the town, all over the nation. So it got to the point where a credit was out of the question. If you couldn't pay for it, you didn't get it.
Were there big chain stores in here then, such as Safeway, Grocery, and Piggly Wiggly?
Safeway and Piggly Wiggly, I think they were here. Safeway, Piggly Wiggly, and yes.
How about the chain stores? Were they pretty lenient with credit at first?
Chain stores never were lenient. Never, not to my knowledge, we never traded with a chain. We traded with Piggly Wiggly in Mission Beach, and we paid cash for everything.
No pad.
And the guy that, the manager of the store was a friend of mine, Tony Salmon. And we couldn't get a nickel with the credit. But anything we bought up there, we paid for it.
So it was the little local mom and pa store.
It was the local mom and pa store, and it was Earl Hass that gave me credit in Ocean Beach there. And it was one of his houses that we lived in for a long period of time, and he was my big creditor. I eventually paid every nickel of it back, but he carried me there for 2 or 3 years, and he carried a lot of other people too. Until he didn't go broke, but he finally got it. He sold the store for a loss, and he turned all of his accounts over to a collection agency. And I imagine most of it was retrieved because of most of his customers. Most of the people, of course, are honest. Basically, they're honest people, and if they have the money and the wherewithal, they'll pay their bills. At least they were in those days. Was a man's word was as good as his bond in most cases. But if you don't have it, you don't have it. And if it hadn't been for those little grocery stores and little neighborhood places like that that knew you, I don't know what we would have done. So help me, I don't know what we would have done. Because we just couldn't get enough welfare to take care of it.
Dave, did you ever come to the time during the really tough year in the present when you and Ez simply didn't have anything to put on the table?
No. I never, We never did come to the time when we didn't eat. We had something, maybe not much, but we had something. I never would let it get that bad. If I'd had to steal, I'd have done it. But I know when times were really tough, when I was working in that King George Hotel, like I say, I would place bets in the bookies for a tip for the residents of the hotel. They'd give me money to bet on horse races, and I'd go to the bookies and play their bets for them, take all the chances of getting arrested for them, and then if they won, they'd give me a 25 or 50 cent tip. I would buy their booze for them from the bootlegger, and they'd give me a 10, 15, 20, maybe 25 cent tip for getting the booze for them. Then when they emptied the bottle, I'd take the bottle back and sell it to the bootlegger for a nickel. And that way I got side cash on the side, and always that I could see that we had something on the table to eat besides my $75 a month. And we never did go what you call hungry, but boy, we were pretty skimpy at times.
Dave, I've heard people say, mostly youngsters, know of the Depression only secondhand. Like I'm getting from you or by reading it, reading about it. I've heard people say that what this country really needs is to straighten it out, is to go through another good depression. What do you feel about that?
I think there'd be a revolution if they ever had that to go through again, because the radicals would blame it all on the government. Or they'd have to blame it on somebody, and they'd start a revolution, I'm quite sure. It'd be one hell of a battle. It'd be another, like Chile or Argentina or one of those Latin American countries. I don't think the people are... I think the people, maybe after... Well, I don't know. I don't know whether the people could stand it or not. Because... like Walt was telling me yesterday, people that had the money and had all the luxuries of life were the people that committed suicide, not the poor people. And we are all essentially pretty well off people right today. The poor people and the rich people in life are all used to having all the so-called luxuries of life. They have television, they have booze, they have good homes to live in, they have good clothes, they have good schools, they have everything at their fingertips. They won't let a child miss school. Now, in those days, if you didn't have the money to buy the clothes to go to school, you didn't go to school. The truant officer would go out and raise hell with you if you didn't come to school, but if you didn't have the money or the clothes to wear, you didn't go. Or the wherewithal to get there, now they see that you get there. Everything. So if we had that kind of a depression again where everything was taken away from people, I don't think they could take it. It'd be a revolution. Because I heard people right down there at the Union say, well, my God, if it gets any worse, we'll get our rifles out and we'll start shooting up a few of these sons of bitches and we'll get this thing over with. I heard that lots of times, but it never happened.
You don't want to go through it.
No, sir. It's just, I wouldn't even try to.
Thank you.